Every single day, people take unwanted or unused items to thrift and antique stores across the country. But as the saying goes, one man's trash is another man's treasure, and we're here to prove it. Identify valuable things before you throw them away. Join us as we show and tell of treasures found and sold by a full-time reseller with the hopes of helping you find some treasures of your own. Welcome to the What's Sold podcast.
Welcome back to the What's Sold podcast. Again, my name is Brandon, here with my good friend Matt.
Hello.
Good to see you, Matt. How's your week been going?
Week has been good. You know, it's always, and you're in the same boat with small kids, you never know what's going to happen.
Nope.
You have plans for what's going to happen in the week, and then, you know, your daughter comes in the middle of the night, my stomach hurts, hours later of no sleep, she's throwing up, and you're like, okay, that changes the next day or two.
Yeah.
So we had that earlier, last week, or a little bit through the weekend, and here we are, sort of midweek. You know, I think I know what I'm doing the rest of the week, but I can't predict the future.
Oh, no. Hey, wait, Matt, you could have older kids, and then your wife decides to get an eight-month-old, medically fragile baby into your
sure.
house, and then the whole world tilts on its axis again. So that's where we are. It's like a giant poop storm in our house, but hey, man, we're ready to go. Let's do this.
Well, that has nothing to do with the baby. Let's be honest. This is partly
That's
you.
That's true. That's true. Mostly me. But partly baby, mostly
yep.
me. Anyway, we'll stay away from the fecal
okay,
talk,
fair enough.
Matt. Let's talk what's sold.
Yeah.
And again, tell us what we're going to be talking about today on the show.
Okay.
And then we'll launch into it.
Yeah. For those who are just tuning in, maybe first time, I'm a full-time reseller. I don't exactly love that term, but that is what I do. I take things...
Wait, what do you prefer?
No one's ever asked me that. I guess I just don't like that term because it somehow makes you sound... Listen, if you go to a store and you buy... Like, let's say I go to a Guitar Center in a nearby town. There are going to be new products in there, but there are also going to be used items. Things that have been traded in, they sell. Nobody thinks of Guitar Center as a resale shop. They're not doing anything, and lots of places don't do anything differently than I do. They have maybe different ways of obtaining their product than I do, but they're getting something that's used, and they're turning around and selling it for more than they got it for. That's what I do. I just do it personally, individually, from my own home. But I don't have a storefront, and I don't have that overhead that they have. But the negative connotation that sort of surrounds the world of people doing what I do as individuals is pretty negative, generally speaking, I have found, sadly. And that's why I don't like that, because I don't like being lumped into this grouping of people that maybe are behaving in ways that other people don't like. And that's essentially it. I don't know. I'm a merchant. You know, people being merchants, buying and selling, has been happening since the dawn of mankind. It's not a new idea. It's not something I came up with. It's not even new in the last few decades. But for whatever reason, there's been I think it's because of COVID and other things happening economically, at least in our country, that has caused a gigantic increase in the number of people doing it individually. They found that they can make money. They don't have to rely on going out to stores to do it. But with that, the good and the bad come with that, right? When things jump up dramatically in a very short amount of time, it doesn't give people a chance to adjust their expectations and know kind of what that's like. And people distrust it, all of those things. We could do an entire podcast on just that.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of people, when they think about that, they think used car salesman. You're buying a used car and they've run back to... I mean,
Yeah. Watch out for this person.
Right. The problem with the secondary market is that you can get people that are shady, which ruins the reputation for people that like you that are not shady. So that's... I'm going to call you... a secondary market merchant.
There you go. I mean, the eBay store I operate off of is called the modern day merchant. And that's how I view myself. I am not that being a merchant is a new idea, but the idea of obtaining things in your community and selling them on the internet to someone in another country within a day or two, that hasn't been possible until the last few years. If you look at it, historically speaking, it's a very, very new concept. I am a merchant, but I'm doing it in modern times. So, I mean, you can call me, you know, the sale commander.
Yeah, you're like a tinker.
You could call me the king of, I don't know, something that's regal and has prestige
the king of the secondary
attached
market.
To it. Is what I, yeah, exactly.
Well, ultimately, what we're talking about, though, is reputation.
For sure.
I think about my mechanic, which is he's the greatest mechanic I've ever known. I've been really fortunate in my life to have found mechanics, and it's always word of mouth. But I've talked to him about it. It's like the reputation of a mechanic is critical. If they have a good reputation as honest and fair, they can. There's no way they could ever have not enough work. He is busy all the time. And it's because people go, hey, that guy Bobby at Monteith Auto, little shout out to my boy Bobby.
Boom.
Always takes care of you. And he's the kind of guy, and you always hear this from people, they're like, yeah, I looked at it. You know what? You could fix this, but it's probably not worth it right now. Let's not do that. And the same thing with you. If you sell something, and I think eBay sort of, we're going to talk about eBay today, I think, right?
We are, yes.
Yeah, so on eBay, they sort of force the issue because they're like, the customer has all the control, and or most of the control, I should say. So they're forcing you to be honest. If you sell a cruddy good, eBay's going to get you. So
yep.
Reputation, I mean, we could do a whole show, and we should, on reputation alone and how important it is in any business, but especially in the kind of work you're doing.
It's the most important thing, in fact. Years ago, I don't know, I was at some sort of talk, and they asked, like, what is the most important thing to you in your life? And everyone is saying things like, my spouse, my children, you know, my pet, or my home, or, you know, you had lots of things. Nobody said reputation. They said, I want you to consider that reputation is the most important thing to you, because all of those things that you mentioned, that the people mentioned, are very important. But you consider if tomorrow somebody accused you of something and everyone believed it, including your family, and all of a sudden your reputation is heavily tarnished, that permeates every aspect of your life.
Right.
And it's very difficult to recover from that. And I try to operate my business with as much integrity as possible. But even when you do that, when you're interacting with people, you still have to defend yourself at times. You will be accused. I have been accused of things I haven't done, and I have to tread lightly because I operate a lot in my community. I visit the same places. If I go in a store and someone says, hey, you stole from me, all of this, whether it's true or not, if they stick to it, I've just lost a sourcing location, which is a big deal for me and my business.
Right.
And so you have to tread lightly, and you do your best. I do my best, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's a really, really good point for anybody out there listening, is that protecting that, it might take a little bit of extra work, or a lot of extra work, to protect that reputation. But your reputation, you're only really as good as
yes.
your reputation, especially when you get into things like secondary markets or car sales. Like, if you're a car salesman and you're shady, you know, the challenge there is that not people don't buy cars like they do
sure.
in the reseller market per se, like every other week or something. But you see those car salesmen that are really, really well respected and have a good reputation, people go mm-hmm. back to them every time. I would much rather pay more money to somebody I trusted who's going to tell me the truth than somebody who's going to give me a slightly better deal. And that goes for every industry, contractors, everything, than if I'm going to save a few dollars, but I'm going to lose in the long run. So reputation
for sure.
right, is absolutely paramount.
Yep. That's an okay segue, I think, into these platforms we're going to talk about today that avenues through which I attempt to sell items that I get, the primary one being eBay, but we'll also talk about other sites like Etsy or possibly Facebook Marketplace, that kind of thing. So yeah, so let's get into that.
Yeah.
The primary spot that I sell my items is eBay. The reason for that is, there are several reasons, but the primary reason is that they bring in the most potential buyers to their platform of any platform that offers that service, and it's not even close. The second place is way less than half of the number of people that are coming to the platform to look to purchase things. So that's the number one reason I can sell to people not only in my state, my country, but around the world if I opt to. You don't have to sell things to internationally, but you certainly can, and eBay has some kind of procedures set up around international sales where they kind of do a little work in the middle of that process that kind of helps the sellers. But I do that. I've been selling on eBay since about 2000. So, you know, 24 years.
Wow.
I've not been doing it full time since
yeah.
then. I've only been doing it full time for about the last 4 years. But, you know, that, as you, it's a dynamic world. The platform has changed a lot. for better in some ways, for, you know, for the worse in others. But I'm familiar with the platform. It's pretty intuitive. They still make changes every year based on what they're seeing. But I have found a way to carve out a full-time income by selling. I could use them exclusively, and I would be able to pay my bills. I don't use them exclusively, and we'll get into that in a few minutes, mainly because I don't want to have all of my, you know, eggs in one basket. If something happens, it's a, you know, I'm paying them with proceeds from my sales,
sure,
and I'm also paying them a monthly subscription fee to list a certain number of items for free per month, that sort of thing. So it's a service they provide. It's a platform. They allow me to sell on their platform, and I pay them for that service. However, that service, it, not only does it come at a price, but I don't have a lot of control. Like, they set up the policies and procedures for how I'm supposed to interact with that site and how I'm supposed to interact with potential customers or other sellers, because I'm a buyer as well as a seller on eBay. So it's a good site to you. It has been a good site for me. It comes with downsides as well, because as you sort of alluded to before, eBay heavily sides on buyers. So if there's ever a conflict or there's something happens and they're taking two people's points of view or information about what happened, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're going to side with the buyer and not the seller. It's odd to me because they make their money from the proceeds of a sale of an item that was sold by the seller. So, but they have their own reasons for doing it that way. And you said you want to weed out people who try to scam you, who are trying to be dishonest or manipulate.
Well, right, because ultimately, that's great that you're on there and you're selling.
Correct.
Because if that's not there.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, if the customer says, well, I can't trust anything on eBay, I'm not going to come there. There is no business. There is nobody to sell to.
Mm-hmm.
So you could kind of understand the reason why. I've had a really bad experience personally, just as a personal seller, that I had no idea about eBay and how it worked. And you're going to explain that, but I was flummoxed when I sent this thing that worked perfectly well. The person said, oh, it didn't work. And then I had to send their money back. And I was like, wait, what? Why would I have to say, just because you couldn't figure it out means I have to eat it, but that's the deal.
Yeah. I have lost, and I do mean lost, just evaporated, probably $2,000 or $3,000 in the last 3 years from some bad situations on eBay, where, like, in one case, so if you sell shoes on eBay, and I can't remember what the monetary threshold is today, I think it's around $200, but if you sell a pair of shoes for less than $200, when you go to fulfill that order and you send it, you're sending it directly to the buyer, like most things. However, if shoes are above that threshold, and again, that may have changed, but it goes to a third party that eBay contracts with to do quote-unquote authentication services for them. So what happens is, if I sell you a pair of shoes for $201, it's a pair of Nike Jordan 1s, and I send them off, I'm not actually sending them to you, Brandon. I'm sending them to an address of a third party that's contracted with eBay, and some worker is going to open that box, they're going to examine those shoes, and they're going to make a determination as to whether or not they are in fact what I said they were and that I described them correctly. You have to have specific types of pictures that they can look at. You have to have, everything has to be intact the way that you described it. And if it is, then they, you know, quote unquote, approve that, and they send it on to the buyer. If they find some issue and they don't think that you were honest, or maybe you were honest, you just didn't provide the information that they require, they essentially deny that. They box it up and they send it back to you, and they immediately refund the buyer. And then you have to do your own legwork to figure out, well, what happened here. So two things that happened with regard to shoes in the last 4 years. One was, I had a pair of Jordan 1s. They were brand new. They were in the box. I didn't even remove them from the original factory box. It said Nike. I opened it to look in to make sure it was what it was. It was the correct size, all of that. But it was a pair of brand new shoes. They have a hang tag that has the Jordan logo on it. Really cool shoes. I sent them off. They go to the authenticator. The authenticator, to my surprise, after about a week, denies the sale. They immediately refund the buyer and they send me the shoes back. When I get the shoes and I open them, I'm thinking, what in the world could have been wrong here? Because I didn't even remove them from the original boxes or everything. When I get them back and I look at them, I find that the hang tag is missing. Now, the hang tag was in there. I saw it before I sent it. So I contact eBay and I say, hey, this is the situation. And they say, well, it was denied because they said, the authenticator said that some of the, like the item, the hang tag specifically was not present and therefore not everything was complete. And so they wouldn't sign. I said, hold on a second. I know that it was complete. I didn't remove it from the box. I saw it when I got it and it was from the factory, from Nike factory, sent directly to me. And it basically came down to one of two things. Either the worker in removing those shoes and inspecting them dropped it or lost the tag, or there was theft involved. Because those tags by themselves, I mean, these shoes were probably like a $1,000 pair of shoes. The tag alone is worth $150 to $200. So if I were just to sell the tag, so the tag by itself has monetary value. It's small. It would be easy to pocket. So I was either there was negligence involved in the authentication or there was theft. And I proposed those things. It came down to them saying essentially, hey, I know you've been on this platform for a long time. You sold lots of the items, but we trust our authenticators, who are not eBay employees. They are a contracted other company. So,
well, could you have taken a picture of that tag before you sent it?
I could have, and I should have. However, it wouldn't have mattered because it's my word against the word of an employee or someone that eBay contracts with. And they would again say, well, we trust their word over yours. And when they make that decision, there's nothing I can do. So what happened was I got a pair of shoes sent back to me that are now worth about $200 less than they were when I sent them because it's now missing a piece and I cannot sell it in the same way that I sold it before. I've also lost a good market for those shoes because a person wants to buy them complete. They don't want to buy them without the hang tag. So that was one stinky situation that happened to me. Another was a time I sold on the same day two different pairs of shoes to two different people in the country, both of which needed to be authenticated. Same situation. They get sent off. About a week later, I get a message from one of the buyers saying, hey, I got the wrong pair of shoes. And they send me a picture, and it is not the pair of shoes that was sent to them. It should have been sent to them. It was the pair of shoes that was supposed to have been sent to the other buyer. So I had to contact and say, hey, these both went to your authentication center. They didn't know. I mean, I was speaking with an eBay manager. They had no idea what happened. I was like, you sent them to the wrong people. You got them swapped. Your authenticator looked at them and then sent them off from there to the wrong people. It was the same day, two separate orders, two separate people. So the downside was the person who contacted me about receiving the wrong shoes were the ones who were supposed to receive shoes that were quite a bit more valuable than the others. So it was on me to try to contact the other buyer and say, hey, did you happen to get some really valuable Jordan 1s, like $1,000 shoes, instead of your $80 or, you know, your $200 pair of shoes that you ordered? And they're like, oh, yeah, you know, I did get these, but I'm not in the country now. I'm in Costa Rica. So it's going to be really hard for me to send these back. And I go, well, I'll pay you for the shipping. According to eBay and people I talked to, it should take approximately 2 weeks and it's going to take about $75. I'll pay that to get them back. And then dead silence. Never heard from them again. So I contact eBay again and I say, hey, you sent these to the wrong people. And essentially there was no culpability. There's no, well, we sent these, we think we sent them to the right person. If in fact this other person got this person's shoes, we can't force them to send them back. So what happened? They refunded both buyers and I did not get either pair of shoes back because they could not legally force them to return the item. And I just lost the money and the items.
But what I don't understand about that is, where does eBay just basically say, screw you? Because that sounds like a screw you type thing, because they were the ones that made the mistake, not mm-hmm. you. You mm-hmm. can prove they made the mistake. So why wouldn't eBay say to the authenticator, you're on the hook for this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is an excellent question. They should. I feel like they should have.
There's no answer to that?
Well, the answer is they could accept responsibility and pay me out, but they didn't want to, I guess. Because I spoke with multiple managers. Sometimes when you run into these situations and you have multiple calls and you talk with a manager, they essentially say, hey, like, I'm the one who makes the final decision. I'm going to make this decision to not, you know, to enact this course of action, and I just have to eat it. So what I'm trying to say is that, like, this is not common. This is a rare occurrence. This has happened 3 to 4 times, not these exact occurrences, but things like this in the course of 3 or 4 years of working on eBay. But one item that it was a separate issue entirely was a situation where I sent them an item. It was very valuable and heavy, cost a lot to ship there. They said it was missing a couple of components. It was like a piece, like a device, like a electronic device. I actually contacted the manufacturer and ordered those additional parts and then shipped them on my own dime to that person to try to make things right. When they got them, they said, yeah, this still isn't what I need. So I'm going to send the item back. And I was like, wait, I've already paid extra money and I've sent you these other items. I went back. I didn't feel like I should have to accept a return since I was trying to work with them and I had paid additional money. At the end of the day, eBay said, you're going to have to accept the return and we can't force them to send you the items you already paid for and sent them back either. So after about 60 days of going back and forth with eBay and this buyer, I did receive the item back, which they had put in an empty box with no packaging. The item was completely destroyed. It was about a $1,200 item. So I was out the money. I got an item back, but it was entirely destroyed, so I could not resell it. And eBay would not refund me the money and basically said, you know, everything's done. You got your item back. They were refunded. We're fine. So the only way I could salvage that was I actually had to deconstruct that device, take components from it, and try to sell those components as pieces that people could use who needed them, things that had broken on their devices. And I ended up recouping about 40 to 50%. But it was a lot of time, a lot of extra work on my part. So sometimes you don't, that kind of thing can happen. Now, a lot of people, maybe like yourself, Brandon, if you had experienced that early on, if you were not a full-time reseller, didn't depend on this type of work to pay your bills, you would say, forget this. I'm never using this platform again. And you're not the first person that I've heard say that. And I don't blame you. I don't blame you. But for me, I accept that there are risks involved in this. I accept that there is going to be some loss. And it's very aggravating to me. It has not been so aggravating that I have completely changed the platform. Because at the end of the day, with the number of buyers and the business I have set up for myself, it still makes sense for me to continue using them. But, you know, it hurts. It hurts to deal with that sort of thing.
Yeah. So it strikes me a little bit of, Uber. I never realized this about Uber, but when you take an Uber cab, there's a rating system for the driver. A lot of people are like, oh, I give the driver 5, whatever. The driver's bad, I give him 3. There's also a rating system for the passenger. And if you're a drunken idiot in the Uber car, they can rate you really low. And then Uber drivers will, it happens a lot, where Uber drivers will not come and pick someone up because they have a low rating below a certain point because they've had bad experiences in their journey. So it's kind of interesting to me that does eBay have a rating system for sellers and buyers?
So sellers and buyers can rate a transaction or an interaction with another person themselves. So buyers can, every time there's a transaction, a buyer can rate the seller can rate the buyer. So that can happen. And your rating, particularly for a seller, mm-hmm. pops up there and it will show you like their rating. Now, I do a high volume of items. I sell between 12 and 1500 transactions on eBay, not individual items, but transactions. Some of those transactions could be 100 items or 1,000 items in one transaction. So I do a lot of transactions. I have a lot of ratings. I'm not as, first of all, I feel like I do a good job. Like I said, I try to operate with integrity. I try to describe things well. I try to get them shipped quickly. That your shipping speed, all of that is rated and available for people to see. So if I'm getting on as a buyer and I'm looking at an item and I want to go just see, okay, what is the store about? You can see what their rating is. Is it 100%? Is it 90%? Is it 75? If you start to dip below a certain thresholds in these criteria that eBay have set up, they will start to, it will start to affect your store in a monetary way. If you start having low ratings and you're not shipping things off in time, eBay will actually start taking a higher percentage of a fee when you sell a transaction, sell something. Yeah, so like right now, it's 13.5%. That could jump up 5 to 10% more that I will have to pay eBay if they feel like I'm not operating my store at standards that they've set up. So they incentivize, I don't know if you would call it an incentive or a disincentive, but they have some of those metrics in place so that they can try to keep the level of, I don't know what you would say, like a high standard for their sellers so that people can buy with confidence. Because like you said, it's all about confidence. Well, they want more and more people to come to their platform. If they have people leaving their platform, then that hurts their bottom line, their investors that they, I mean, they're a, I don't know if they're a Fortune 500 company, but it's certainly a publicly traded company.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, they want you to do what you say you're going to do on this platform.
Well, Peter Thiel and Elon Musk are not going broke anytime soon, and they created the platform. So, it is interesting. I was just thinking, I think the individual seller guy, a person like me that doesn't sell all the time, and I did catch you on calling yourself a reseller. I'd like to call you a merchant, but...
Thank you. Force of habit.
Is you, again, we talk about this a lot on the show about business calculus. You would look at this and say, okay, so let's say I sold $100,000 worth of material throughout the course of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And of that $100,000, 0.1% of 1% is lost. Let's say, I don't know, $1,000, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever, make it simple. You would have to look at that and say, is it worth it? This business, this model brought me X amount of dollars. Mm-hmm. There's going to be some loss along the way. That's just business. For it doesn't matter if you're massive or small, there's going to be loss. So you hope that you don't have that. And there's some things in place. I think that eBay probably errs a little bit too much on the side of the buyer. That said, they're trying to protect their, we said at the beginning, reputation with buyers so that you go on there and you can trust that you're not going to be buying from some unscrupulous seller. So I could see why I could see the nuance of it, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, you are describing me. I do six-figure sales on eBay. I have multiple eBay stores. I do this full-time, so I'm not doing it part-time. I am. It's about volume. It's about, you know, selling as much stuff as I can and paying my bills. And there is loss. It's different every year. But what I stand to gain is so much greater than those frustrations and that loss. Mm-hmm. And I just have to factor that in. I have to save money back. I save money back for low months. You know, when I have a good month, I don't just go blow that money. I've got to save it back. We've talked about this on a previous episode. And so the thing is, it is a good platform overall. It's glitchy sometimes, but it's a very dynamic and a very complicated system that they've got running across the world. And so I will say that if I ever need help, they have a good setup for answering questions. I can chat with somebody. I can get somebody on the phone. And if I'm really frustrated or I need to talk to somebody who actually has the authority to make, you know, unilateral decisions, then I ask for a manager, and they cannot deny you a manager. It may take some time sometimes, but they will get you to a manager to speak with. And oftentimes they can make a decision on their own. They have the authority to do that. Whereas the people, the first line of people to help you, can't do that. They're just following prompts and they're following certain policies that they can't overstep.
Right.
So I'll say eBay is my primary thing. I'll real quick just say, I also sell at an antique store locally because I like to have some larger items that I don't want to ship and mess with the cost of that. There, it's almost like a storage. It's being stored for me, but it's also available to be sold, so I don't have to pay for storage. I pay for the booth or whatever, but the sales cover that. And then I also sell on Facebook Marketplace sometimes. Of all places to sell, that's my least favorite platform because you just get... You have to kind of be tied to that because people are sending you messages, asking questions, wanting to meet up, and you have to be... It just affects my time. I like to be able to set things up on my own schedule. I don't have to work with other people's schedules. Also, you get tons of people trying to scam you. Hey, right. Is this available? Yes, it is. All right, great. Send me your phone number. Nope. I'm not going to get out of here with that junk. They're trying to get your number and use it. It's ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. Facebook Marketplace is so sketchy sometimes. It's crazy.
It is. It is. But, you know, sometimes I get big items. I get a table. You know, I get a desk. I get something large that is breakable, and I don't want to. Maybe somebody locally wants that. I also find that I have to sell things at, like, I'm not kidding you, 50% or less than what I would sell it for online if I'm selling it locally. Because people, it's like they think they're at a yard sale. And so they're like, hey, yeah. I know you got this for $100. Would you take 15? And you're like, no, I don't get out of bed for that.
Well, the best is when people go, hey, will you take $15 cash?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Well, as opposed to
sure,
what?
Sure.
Cougarans? You know, bear bonds? I mean, what do you... I mean, what? I mean, it's crazy how oftentimes that stuff happens on... I agree with you.
Well, and people trade too. It's, you know, sometimes you can barter. And almost any time I see somebody who's willing to barter, they're like, what will they want? I'll take old coins, firearms. Like, people are out there trading all kinds of things that they probably shouldn't. And so I just kind of like to stay away from that if I can, but I'm very well versed in eBay, so
we'll go deeper into Facebook Marketplace on a later show, because it's worth talking about sort of how the sort of type of person and the things to look out for on Facebook Marketplace, regardless of how you do it. When I was in San Francisco, Craigslist was everything. You haven't even mentioned Craigslist, but nope. Craigslist was everybody bought and sold on Craigslist, and that's changed. And
I did. You know, I used it.
Yeah. And we'll talk about how that changed and what changed and all that stuff. But ultimately, what we're trying to do is bring awareness around the goods and the bads of these platforms and the places, because ultimately what we're trying to do is sell things.
Yeah, and that's true. I feel like I have too heavily talked about like my very few bad situations with eBay, so I don't mean to bash eBay. I'm very happy that platform exists, because I'm making my living primarily as, you know, by using that platform. So it is good, but you know, these are all the world of reselling. I'll say it's a dynamic, and it's evolving quite a bit and very rapidly. Right. So, you know, Craigslist was the big thing. Facebook Marketplace kind of took a lot of those people away because a lot of scammers got in there and there wasn't a lot of regulation. And so now Facebook Marketplace has gotten that way. There will be others. So you can sell. But listen, people do what I do on eBay on Marketplace all the time and do very well. This is just my experience. Etsy's another one. I think Etsy's a great platform, but it's more geared towards people who hand make things, create things.
Right.
That's not the only stuff you have to sell on there, but I will probably start using them more in the future now that I've got multiple eBay stores set up and things for stuff that's more in that kind of realm. But I like it. I like selling online. I think it's good. I'm able to make a living at it. And future episodes, hopefully I can give more guidance on how to do that.
Yeah, and I think we'll talk about multiple stores, not just like why to have them, but more like how to have them and what to put in there. We are sort of up against time, though, right now. This has been an amazing, I've learned so much, which is great. Hopefully those of you out in the audience have learned a lot as well. Remember, when you come, listen to us, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. It really helps us. Also, write comments on Apple Podcasts. Check out the Rusty the Reseller channel. And you can email us at the What's Old Podcast @gmail.com. If you have any questions about reselling or anything like that, we're always there. We can't promise we'll answer you in the next hour, but we will answer you eventually. So we really appreciate the people that are listening, and it's great to see the audience growing. It's super cool.
Yeah, definitely. And if you have experiences yourself, good or bad, that you want to share, leave a comment on that or send us a message. We like to hear kind of what's going out there. This is hopefully going to become an environment where people can share information and just help everyone.
Absolutely. All right, Matt. Well, thank you. We will see you guys soon for another show. Otherwise, signing off now.
Thank you.